This is... This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley and the foothills and beyond. And you're listening to Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR 90.1 FM. Peace and Justice is a public affairs talk show that brings you the latest information on the status of peace and social justice in our community, our nation, and planet. And speaking of community and nation and planet, what a week. Anyway. I'm your third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, and I'm calling today's show a case for environmental stewardship. And my lineup of guests today include Brian Plood, the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church here in Chico. I've also got Samuel Whiteswan Perkins, cultural consultant and freelance writer, who will be giving us some insight into a Native American understanding of environmental stewardship. And finally, I have Peter Melton, founder of a group here in Chico called Daring to Discuss. And he'll be addressing the question, is our efforts to reverse climate change too little too late? And the common ground that all of our guests have is a passion for caring for our planet and all of its natural resources. And as many of you may know by now, my specialty is talking about how faith intersects with culture and how faith communities are involved with peace and social justice issues. And I'd like to throw in a little music in the mix now and then, because music, it consoles, it inspires, and I believe that music speaks to our souls. A reminder that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, its board of directors, or its underwriters, or its volunteers. But you know what? Hey, that is the beauty of community radio. We celebrate diversity in all of its infinite combinations. So, segment one today is with Brian Plood, my first guest. He is the minister of the, is it the Universalist Church or Fellowship?
Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
Fellowship, okay. I wasn't quite sure about that one. And you've been here in town for how long?
About 18 months.
18 months. How are you liking Chico?
I'm enjoying Chico.
Okay.
It's a lovely town, and the recreational outdoor piece of Chico is spectacular.
I like that. Yes, spectacular is something that I'd agree with too. I've been living here for 9 years now, and I love Chico. So, well, you know what's funny, because whenever I see or hear about the Unitarians in the news, the word environmental justice is usually involved. What is environmental justice, and why is it so important to Unitarians?
Unitarians affirm and promote seven principles. And the first of these is that there is inherent worth and dignity in all humans, and I would go further and say in all life. Mm-hmm. The seventh of those principles is that we're all interconnected. So environmental justice and social justice are intertwined and speak to, both those principles speak to those issues. It's a truism that environmentally toxic activities are often situated in areas that impact communities that have little or no voice.
Mm, yeah.
people, poor communities live in industrial areas where there is air pollution and other kinds of pollution. Mm-hmm. Landfills are situated in areas. One could talk about the pipeline that has just been approved and the Native Americans not having a voice.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, speaking of environmental impact of like waste and toxic things like that, how have the Unitarians been involved in helping people get a voice?
We work as a national denomination and individually as congregations to bring voice to those without voice.
Right. Yeah.
We've been a friend to. We have a college of social justice.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in seminary, I went on one of their training and educational events to Tucson and then south of the border to become educated on immigration issues and the actions of ICE.
Mm-hmm.
We met with a federal judge in Tucson who was Hispanic and who... After we watched the proceedings where the people who were being deported were getting about 20 seconds of hearing time each,
mm-hmm.
He took off his robe and came and sat down with us.
Nice.
And he said, as a federal judge, I am sworn to uphold the laws of the land.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say whether I disagree with him or not, but that was implicit in what he said. I'm sworn to uphold the laws of the land. It is up to people like you to change and make the laws of the land.
What an affirmation. Wow, that's good. So what are some of your biggest concerns right now, considering our new administration's commitment or maybe lack thereof to dealing with climate change?
Climate change in this country is so politicized. It's just remarkable. And I have read, I've heard that there's a feeling among conservatives, among Republicans, that the whole climate change is just basically a grab for more regulation.
Oh, okay.
However, I think there's a grassroots effort or grassroots realization that among people in highly red areas of the country, that is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And based on the realities of on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the city of Miami is one of those places. It's a place where you can't use the words climate change.
Yeah.
But the mayor of Miami and the Public Works Department are, at the cost of tens of millions of dollars, raising the streets of Miami 2 feet because they are regularly being flooded.
Mm-hmm.
Already, they are regularly being flooded.
Right.
I read an article recently in the Christian Science Monitor about a county on the east slope of the Rockies where ranchers are realizing that things are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're seeing it on the ground, they're seeing it in the weather, they're seeing it in the availability of water.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, they're not buying into it wholeheartedly yet, but they are accepting, yeah, things are changing, this is real.
Right. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Justice on FM 90.1 KZFR, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills and beyond. And Peace and Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Baker's Birkenstock, featuring more than 40 brands of footwear, socks, purses, and hats. Baker's Birkenstock has been serving our community for over 40 years with locations at 333 Broadway Street in downtown Chico and at 5781 Clark Road in Paradise, and by Chico Hearing Aid Center, changing lives through better hearing since 1949. Chico Hearing Aid Center is devoted to providing the best hearing possible and a try before you buy program, plus a state-of-the-art hearing aid supply. Chico Hearing Aid provides hearing evaluations at no cost, and you can call them at 342-8132. And again, if you're joining me right now, Brian Plude, who is the minister at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I got it right this time, yeah? And he's joining us here today, and we our show today is about environmental stewardship. So, Brian, what's going on in your congregation in the realm of environmental justice?
Our big issue, and it's most people would classify it, I think, as a social justice issue, but I also see it as environmental justice, has to do with homelessness. And we are a big supporter of the Torres Shelter. We fix meals there every month. We have and do support them financially. And the intersection there between homelessness and environment is that people who are homeless and living on the streets do have an impact on the environment that is negative.
Okay.
And that is an issue that has come up both in the downtown and in our Chico parks. The answer, however, is not criminalizing it.
Yeah, right.
We you know, by making criminals of people that don't have homes, it doesn't solve the problem. It's not the it's not what we are called to do as people of faith.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to get people out of homelessness that have been highly successful in other places, city of Boston, state of Utah. And we had the guest here from Utah just several months ago and talked about that.
Yeah.
I hope that there is a community commitment to move forward with that. In the meantime, places like the Torres Shelter are doing a wonderful job in transitioning people out of homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that there's not enough capacity for the need.
Yeah. So, and you're right. You often don't think of homelessness and environmental impact. You think of those as two separate issues. But what are some ways in which homeless people who are homeless have an impact on the environment?
I walk my dog every day in Lower Chico Park, the Lower Bidwell Park, and I see homeless people there on a regular basis. I see the trash that's left behind when they're suddenly forced to move for whatever. You know, sometimes it's, you know, I look at what's there and I think, wow, these are probably all the belongings this person has.
Right.
And for whatever reason, they've been abandoned.
Yep.
I've spoken with the people in the parks and in the lower park along the creek. All the charcoal places have been removed because they were having a regular issue with fires getting started.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know that when, especially with the heavy rains that we've been having lately, when I walk across the channel or any of the waterways through Chico, I notice where there's a concentration of branches. Sometimes there's sleeping bags tied up in that, and like I say, you know these are people's possessions, and it may be the only possessions they have. And here they are getting washed down the creek and tied up in the branches of the trees and such like that. Yeah, it definitely has an impact.
And you know, there's fortunately Chico is beginning to, I understand, make some inroads on this, but the lack of public restrooms that are open.
Right, yeah.
That are open to people.
Yeah. I know that, that's been an issue for a couple of weeks. Our church housed people at the safe space that Chico Housing Action Team has been working on. And that was a topic of discussion for some people, just the lack of restroom facilities or public restroom facilities that mm-hmm. they can use. They get turned down so much when they try to go into a business and they need to use the restroom. So, you know, what do you do, right?
What do you do?
Yeah.
And our congregation also hosted Safe Space. We've hosted it now for 3 years in a row. And because we're a smaller congregation, smaller facility, and we typically are the first ones that open our doors in December because mm-hmm. the need is not quite as great then usually.
Oh, so then your facilities can handle the
our facilities numbers, yeah. can handle the demand.
Yeah. Yep. Well, let's talk about faith communities for a sec. If we're on that subject, let's talk about faith communities and what can they do together? Because you always hear people saying, oh, don't use styrofoam cups and plastic bags and things like that. They're encouraging churches to do that. And that's good and fine and wonderful, and I agree with that. We're trying very hard in our church to be careful about what we use that has an impact on an environment. But what do you think churches together can do to help?
A very good question. A very good question.
I know.
And
let's talk about it.
The reality is that there are very few congregations anymore that are growing.
Yeah. Especially in the mainline. Well, mainline and
across the board from right. what I read. There are very few congregations that are growing. And those that are bucking the trend. I think as congregations, I think it's quite necessary that we pool our resources. We can be more effective with a larger group of people.
Yeah.
And as I tell people in my congregation regularly, the similarities between congregations, the similarities among clergy are much greater than the differences.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can get together with the Chico Area Interfaith Council, and we've got Buddhists there, we've got Baha'i, we've got mm-hmm. Druids. We've got quite a diverse group there. And so you're talking about the decline of a lot of congregations in number. I remember a time, even in my lifetime, I'm only 50 years old, and I remember a time in my lifetime where the church often was at the very front lines of some of these issues, social justice issues, fighting racism, women's issues, and things like that. A lot of times the church is just right there on the front lines, but what do you do when you have a declining church? What do you do when those numbers are decreasing? In our congregation, we've got young families there. We've got young families with children, but we get a lot of gray hair there, too.
Mm-hmm.
These people have been working for years, volunteering their time and such, and they're just tired, So how do we encourage what can the congregations do who may be limited in their human resources? What do you think we can do to address some of these issues?
I think that the first step is to start the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not really a conversation I've heard at the Interfaith Council.
True. Yeah.
And I feel like it should be.
Yeah. We've been addressing homelessness.
Right.
We've been addressing the need for housing and such like that. But you're right. How have we even addressed the issue of the environmental impact of that, or the environmental impact of anything for that matter, other than saying, you know, don't use styrofoam cups or whatever, you know?
So the issues, environmental issues, help me out here as, you know, a relative newcomer to the Chico area. If not, I've been in the valley for a long time. Water is a perennial issue.
That's
we've seen that in spades, you know.
Yep.
This past week.
Yep.
Where we have too much water.
Mm-hmm.
However, which is predicted to be more of an issue with climate change, because more of our precip is going to come as rain, mm-hmm. and less as snowpack.
Yeah.
And weather patterns are predicted to become more extreme.
Right.
The fish issues, mm-hmm. are, you know, the salmon, the steelhead, you know, as a fly fisherman, those are near and dear to my heart. Directly linked with water.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the issues that are peculiar to Butte County, or if not peculiar to Butte County, that are present in Butte County as well as other places that a church community could actually, an interfaith church community could actually get involved with?
Yeah, you know, there's, well, here's the deal, is most of our congregations, it may be true for years, but I know in my congregation, I've got a diverse group of people. I mean, I've got quite a few people in there who very much believe in the impact that humans have on climate change, and they very much think that that we should be working towards doing things to reverse that. But I've also got some folks who deny that climate change has an impact. They just say, well, this is just a part of the natural cycle of the world, and all we need to do is just sit back and ride it out, and everything will be okay, you know. And so to get that conversation started in a congregation, I think, is a challenge too. So I guess maybe the issue is, how do we start the conversation without causing a rift in the congregations? How can we get the people within our congregations to just sit down and talk about the issue without bringing everything else that has little or nothing to do with it to the table? That's challenging. So maybe it starts in our own congregations first.
It does. And I think it also can start in parallel at a place like the Interfaith Council.
Right, yeah, because we've got a diverse group there as far as of what people believe about certain social and political issues. So, yeah. But why don't people talk to each other anymore, Brian? I got to tell you this. This is just an aside. I visited your congregation when I was on sabbatical this summer. And it was great because I went there and it was kind of like the annual meeting where everybody just sits down and talks about what's going on in the church. And everybody in the room had an opportunity to speak. And I know how diverse your congregation is, because as they went around and there were some people, we like certain music, we don't like certain music. We like this style of preaching, we don't like this style. Just back and forth. But the thing is they walked out of there clearly loving each other and respecting each other and agreeing to differ, but uniting in the mission of the Unitarians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. I wish all congregations could do that. You know, that would definitely make an impact. But yeah, I think it just begins in our own, well, it begins in ourselves first, in our congregations, providing opportunities for dialogue, and then going from there. So, Brian, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show today. It's been wonderful getting to know you over this past year, and I wish you the best in your ministry.
Thank you, Jesse.
Sure thing.
I value our friendship.
Yes, indeed. And again, we are KZFR, FM 90.1 here in Chico. We're listener-supported community radio, and we're here in the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. So let's have a little music to console and comfort. I believe we have Sting's song Fragile up on the deck right now. FM 91.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And my next guest today is Samuel White Swan Perkins. Let's see if I've got him on the phone. Do I have you on the phone, Sam?
Thank you for having me back.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, it's funny because I noticed that last week Chris had you on. So listeners are starting to get used to you there. You know, you ought to have your own show. What do you think about that?
Yeah, in time we could talk. I'm not sure what shows like that pay, but
oh yeah, man, I'm just rolling in the dough here, man.
It's always a pleasure to be a guest over at KZFR. So thanks for having me, Jesse.
It is a pleasure to have you. Hey, water has been in the headlines a lot recently, especially this last week here in Oroville with that uncontrolled release of water at the emergency spillways there on the Oroville Dam, and you know the potentially disastrous consequences of floodwaters just overwhelming the areas along the Feather River. And it's interesting that for what, you know, 4 or 5 years now, we've talked about too little water with the drought, and now we're talking about dealing with more water than we've seen in decades. We're talking on the show today about how humankind's lack of environmental stewardship has contributed to the global climate change. So what's going on in Oroville with this, you know, these human-made structures? I'm sure they look great on paper when the engineers and water managers first designed and built it, but, you know, what's going on with that?
Well, yeah, just to kind of pick up where he's left off in regard to what's going on locally, you know, the very first thing I want to do is recognize the fact that we are in occupied Matupta territory.
Mm-hmm.
And to take a minute to honor those folks and thank them for who they are. They're an amazing group of folks, and I'm so honored to be a guest here in their territory. So, but to get back to the Oroville Dam and, you know, how that situation is, like you said, indicative of the negative impact that human interference has had on the waterways, you know, I think it's important to remember that this is a fairly new project. It's only a few decades old. I think it's 50 or 60 years old. And it's constructed at a time when, you know, at least in the sciences, humankind really felt that they were at a point where they could control nature. You know, we see this back in the old farming practices they had back then, and, you know, biology and advances in chemistry. You know, the scientists back then really felt that they had gotten to a point where they'd conquered nature, and we know now that this is not true, to say the least. So, you know, based on the research that's been conducted at several dam deconstruction sites, you know, where they've removed the dams, we know that salmon populations, for example, thrive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a surprising benefit from that I found is that your local canine predator population, the canine species there, begin to thrive as well, so coyotes and wolves. And that's always seen as a really great indicator of what your environment is doing. If you've got those three in place, you know, you've got your salmon and you've got a predatory system going on, then you've got something that's really going well there. So we're definitely moving for, you know, removal of different dams across the West. And you know, while we don't want to see laborers lose their jobs, what we do want to, you know, encourage folks is that there are many more sustainable and much higher paying jobs in other industries like solar. You know, typically a place where you're, as a worker, you're treated a little better. And I can vouch for that, being a volunteer, an intern over at Grid Alternatives here in Chico for some time. So really encouraging folks to check out solar. You know, and to remember, too, that is insofar as all the talk around sustainability these days, that it's rooted in what we call TEK. You know, we would have nothing in sustainability if it wasn't for traditional ecological knowledge.
Oh.
So this is Aboriginal, Indigenous, or other forms of traditional knowledges regarding the sustainability of local resources. You know, Lake Oroville wasn't always there. There was a presence there, a human presence there, you know, that operated things in a very different way, and I think it's important for us to look back on how folks managed things then and then talk to their ancestors. What can we do now to keep things more status quo?
Right. Yep. Well, if you're just joining me, this is Jesse Kearns on Peace and Social Justice, and we have Samuel White Swan Perkins, who is a freelance writer, and what else do you do? So much. I run into you so much in around town.
Yeah, I wear a few different hats. So I work with my partner, Araya, on Indigenous Support Collaborative NorCal, but we are involved in Indigenous work, you know, around the Bay Area as well. Haven't lived there for some time. I'm also a sales executive for a company in IT. So I wear a few different hats. I keep busy.
Yes, you do. you know, we've been watching how things have unfolded with the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I have to confess that the first time I ever heard the term water protector, it was in reference to the Native Americans in that area who wanted to stop the pipeline from crossing the waterways on the Standing Rock Reservation. And later I heard Kayleen Sisk from the Winnemem-Wintu tribe up near Mount Shasta use this term too when she gave her annual address. What does that term mean?
Well, I think Water Protector, in my humble opinion, is a placeholder that's being used now, and it's just an extension of being native. We're as much water protectors as we are air, land, and fire protectors, arguably. So it's just being taught from an early life that, in this case, water is the basis of life on this planet, and without it, there would be no life.
Right.
We know that people know this. We know that people from all walks of life around the world recognize this. What water protectors often struggle to understand is why predominant culture fails to understand this.
Okay.
We know that people are taught, as Lawrence O'Donnell said so aptly on his show a few months ago, insofar as the Dakota Access Pipeline, we know that folks know that you need clean water to live. So we find it a bit frustrating from time to time why we don't see this in practice more. You know, Native children are taught to consider what impact their every action will have, not only on them, but on the next seven generations, you know.
Right.
There's some of our nations, we still really hold them to that. You know, that's something that you're taught. You know, where you're not going to do this, or you're going to do this. What does that have? What impact does that have on you? And then your kids and their kids and their kids and so on.
Right.
So you really have to think before you act. And it seems as if the actions of the folks who are insistent on this pipeline's installation, frankly, are acting from a place of lack of self-respect.
Hmm.
You know, otherwise, how could you work to destroy the water of 12 million residents of the Missouri River Corridor,
Yeah. Not
to mention countless wildlife environments, as well as riparian fishing habitats? I mean, who doesn't like to go fishing? I mean,
yeah.
You know what I mean? if I tell guys, you know, if you like to have a beer, well, if you don't have clean water, you can't start. You can't have a beer. You know,
yep.
I tell you, NFL guys, they've got to run on Gatorade, can't make it out of oil.
Yep.
Well, you know, it's about water.
We may not be old enough to remember this, but when I grew up in Oregon, there was a beer called Olympia that came out of Olympia, Washington. I don't know whether they still brew it anymore, but I remember the tagline on the commercials was, "It's the water and a lot more."
Yeah.
In other words, you know, it was the water that made this beer special.
Yeah, well, you know, I think we're fourth or fifth, maybe even sixth generation St. Louis, and we grew up just down the road from Anheuser-Busch, but that being said, you know, I do remember their competitors, Land and Sky Blue Waters. You
right,
know,
right.
I'm a kid from the 70s, and I remember those days. And so, yeah, I jokingly tell folks, you know, I don't drink. I'm not going to begrudge anybody, but if you don't have clean water, there's a lot you can't have, coffee, beer, or otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to clean water.
Yeah. Well, I got to shout out some love to our contributors and our supporters. Peace and Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Chico Women's Club. Built in 1913, this historic women's club is available for classes, events, concerts, weddings, and celebrations. Located at the entry to Bidwell Park, the Chico Women's Club offers a truly classic setting with modern amenities. Visit chicowomensclub.org for more information, and by Disability Action Center, dedicated to gaining social and economic justice for people with disabilities. DAC can be reached by calling 893-8527 and at actionctr.org. And if you were just joining us, we have Samuel White Swan Perkins here with us, and we're talking about environmental issues and environmental stewardship. It seems like for years, Indigenous peoples from all over the world have been advocating for environmental stewardship. You know, you want to talk about Child of the 70s. Remember that commercial where they showed all these scenes of pollution and garbage along the river, and there was a Native person with full headdress, and the tear came down his eyes? You old enough to remember that one?
Yeah, I do. The guy actually was a non-Native, as it turns out.
He's Italian?
It was one of those rarest things back then where the guy, well, it turns out that he was, in his case, if memory serves, Italian. But you know what? The point was made, and it was poignant. And while we don't like the appropriation, you know, we don't like folks taking on our style of dress and manners, and certainly one would not want to go ahead and wear an eagle feather unless you have the, you know, legal documents in place,
yeah,
that is something that's protected under the Migratory Bird Act. We do appreciate the allyship, and we do appreciate folks standing up from their ancestral tradition and saying, hey, we're not going to have this. So in that point, you know, I just wanted to add, I think that we're in that interesting time where non-natives want to align with us, but, you know, it's always good to keep in mind and be open to reminders, you know, to keep the movement native-centered and to remember, you know, hey, despite everything that's gone on and all the construction and paving over, this is still our house, you know, and we look forward to working with folks. But we do ask those who are new to activism to know that there's a protocol and procedure involved, just like anything else, any other form of work or any kind of process. You know, you kind of have to look to folks who've been down the road before and go ahead and take a minute to just open yourself up to learning. You know, this is totally appropriate in this case, you know, take a step back and be comfortable with learning new information. You know, and I do really want to reiterate that point, especially to us fellows out there, mm-hmm. Guys in particular. You know, I think it's important for us to remember that this is an Indigenous people's movement, but it is one that is women-led, and women-centered. And to that end, you know, I would encourage folks to look to Native women in this community. There are folks who are involved in the environmental movement here and getting stuff done, you know, all the way from Grass Valley all the way down here. There's some amazing Indigenous women doing some work down here, and want to make a shout out to Christy Smith in particular, who will be doing an event over at Machupta Tribal Hall this weekend. It's going to be Saturday, 11 to, no, I'm sorry, from 2 in the afternoon on, I believe, till 5 or so. They'll be hosting an event over there with the Joseph family on the topic of how to be a firekeeper in one's own community. So this is a family who'd been at Standing Rock and is coming to our community to speak tomorrow.
Right.
So a very rare privilege. It is a ticketed event. If you want to check out Brown Paper Tickets for more information. So, but just, you know, making sure that folks stay centered in the movement. And remember, again, that it is women-led and youth-led to that extent, too. So we are mm-hmm. looking to the younger folks, the younger women in particular, to guide us in this.
Yeah. I was supposed to have Colleen Sisk on a show that I did earlier in December, I believe it was. I was substituting for Chris, and she was at Standing Rock, and she'd agreed to do an interview, but she could not. She was at a place where she wasn't getting a strong enough cell signal for it to work. And right. So what I did, the backup that I had was her address to the Winnemem Wintu in, I think it was 2015. And it was incredible. I was glad that I was able to air that. Of course, it would have been better to talk to her, but it was a powerful message that she had. And it's nice.
That's right.
To see the women in leadership and taking a lead in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about power and power plays and such like that. We talked a little bit about this earlier of how to phrase what we're about to talk about, but we have a lot of white men in power that seem to be doing things that are, you know, historically, when you look back in our country, total disregard for the Native population. And how is that still happening today?
Well, you know, it is something, you know, that we still face, and it's not necessarily something that we want to put on, you know, white folks in particular. It's about a mindset. You know, it's what we call a Wisechu mindset. Where I'm from, Wisechu is a Lakota word that means a fat taker, and the implication there is someone who takes the very best for just themselves and leaves the rest. You know, that's someone who would take the fat from the buffalo and just leave the rest of the carcass to rot, for example. So, what we want to try to do is stay away from that mindset, you know, and it's something that folks from all walks of life can take on. But what we really want to do is encourage people who are from a non-native, non-indigenous background to really try to look to us as leaders in this. You know, we're the ones who have been able to maintain the tie with Earth through this time, and we've been working since the Civil Rights era and beyond to just keep things going in that way. So while we may not have, or one person have all the answers, we are really well banded together, very well organized and educated these days, and really making some amazing strides in this. So, you know, I really want to give a shout out to Dallas Goldtooth, for example, at IEN. I want to give a shout out to Linda Black Elk, who was the lead medic over at Standing Rock. wonderful person, wonderful leader. I was in contact with her yesterday. Just so many amazing things going on, especially LaDonna, Winona. You know, they're all staying involved and they have some really great things to say about this. So just really encouraging folks to look to the Native women for leadership, and they'll make sure to get you in line.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah, so.
Well, here's the subject that we've been talking about, and my next guest is going to address this quite a bit. But in your estimation, do you think that we will be able to turn things around, or have we reached a point of no return in our ability to address climate change and the environmental impact?
Well, you know, what I do want to do is leave folks with a bit of encouragement, you know, if I may. You know, I do know a bit about this struggle. It's something that, you know, Grandpa had been telling me about way back in 1993, 94. This is my Grandpa Rabbit in the Gourd Dance Society tradition. That's a men's Southern Plains tradition that we have. And I've been an honor to be a member of that society for going on about 10 years now. And he was a big leader in that Gourd Dance Society, and so although he was not my blood grandfather, he was a gentleman that was able to take me under his wing and guide myself and many other young folks at the time through that society and through the community in a good way. And so when I talked to him about it, you know, he'd tell us the story of the Lakota black snake prophecy, and that was that in time, a black snake would come and encircle Turtle Island, and it would go above the land and under the land and above the water and under the water. But wherever it touched, it would leave black venom that would poison and destroy anything that it touched. And so for a long time, the elders thought, well, maybe that's that highway system, you know, because it's kind of like a snake and that it wraps all over Turtle Island. But as they got older and started thinking about it and then started seeing the advent of the oil industry through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and then in today, they realized it was the pipelines, you know. And so while I've been hearing this story about the black snake prophecy for, gosh, decades now, and we've been getting ready for it this whole time, what Grandpa didn't tell us is how it was going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't share the part about where allies from all over the world, you know, indigenous nations were going to come together in a major reunification, or how many great friends and allies we were going to meet along the way while fighting this thing.
Right.
So I really want to, if I could leave anybody with just a word of encouragement, it's just keep starving that snake through divestment in the big banks. Keep showing up. We've got actions all the time. You can go to Indigenous Support Collaborative, take a look at our website there on Facebook. Come out to our actions. We lead peaceful, prayerful actions against this pipeline, and to bring attention to other pipelines that are coming. There is a pipeline being installed in our county, you know, that we're going to have to keep an eye on pretty soon here. It's the Pilgrim Pipeline, ironically enough. you know, and so we'll have more information for folks on that, too, and want to encourage folks to come out and express their opinions on that as well. So, you know, what we want to do is just encourage folks to keep out there and keep fighting in a good way, you know, and while no one knows exactly how this is going to end up, you know, we may not end up with the exact win that we're looking for. We will end up winning in some way, you know, and I think in a lot of ways we already have the great reunification and, dare I say, renaissance that's going on right now in Indian country is amazing. This unification has brought back ceremonies and songs and dances and even in some case revitalizing forms of language that haven't been, you know, publicly spoken in a long time. So there's a lot of really great things going on right now, in spite of all of the struggle. So yeah. I really want to lift folks up on that, and we will win.
Yeah.
We will win.
Yeah, I appreciate that word of encouragement. Usually that's, I have to draw that out of somebody. Hey, give me a word of encouragement today, and you were already there, Sam, and I appreciate that so much.
Brother, that's what I'm here to do, and I just thank you so much. You know, just it's always an honor to speak with folks from KZFR, and just an honor to be a Chicoan. You know, I've seen so much organization from folks recently in the community. It's really, really amazing to see. So.
Yeah. Yep.
Just wanted to encourage everybody and look forward to seeing you guys out there, seeing all the folks out there at our next gathering.
All right. Well, thank you, Sam. I suppose I will run into you sometime soon in the community.
Sure. In fact, you know, if I've got a second, I just wanted to share.
Sure.
We're down here right now at Trinity, just around the corner from the radio show there, you know, the office is there. And we're having a general strike day. We've got a potluck, a bit of a teach-in going on. We're going to be here for a few more hours, so come on down and get some adobo. You know, come on down and have a coffee. Come down and listen to some great speakers, and we're going to have a great day.
Great. All right. Yeah, I had noticed that was going on. I was kind of gathering some public service announcements, and I saw that. And, oh, this looks fun. And then I realized it began about when our show began. And so
and I'm the MC, so I should probably get going.
You should. All right. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate you being on the show.
Not a problem, Jesse. We'll see you real soon, brother. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Plamo Mielo. Thank you.
And you're listening to KZFR 90.1, and this is Peace and Justice, and I'm your host, your third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, and I am sure happy to be here because we've got some great guests today. We're going to take a little music break here. Bill Mash has given us a little plug for something that he's been doing, and then we're going to have some music.
All right, here, Guillermo Mash, on behalf of the Without a Roof Radio program, which airs every Wednesday, 5 to 5.30 here on KZFR 90.1 FM. I want to let folks know, man, a couple of big announcements. We have worked out an agreement to have 500 street newspapers from the Homeward Street Journal in Sacramento shipped up here every other month. So street newspaper in Sacramento, it's been going over 20 years. And we're literally going to have 500 copies that we're going to distribute throughout the community here in Chico and maybe some of the surrounds. But what's really cool is they're going to give us a whole page. We're going to call it the Chico Vibe. So look for that coming. And I also want to let folks know that we're doing a business improvement district survey on behalf of Western Regional Advocacy Project on what it's like to be homeless in the downtown business district and what folks have to say around their interactions with business improvement district employees. So last week you learned a little bit about that. And this coming week, next Wednesday, we're going to cover that a little bit more, including some interviews from people that took the survey here on People Powered Radio.
I see trees that are green, too. I watch them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The people passing by, I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? But they're really saying, I love you.
KZFR presents in Chico, a weekend of great music, Saturday and Sunday, March 11th and 12th at the Chico Women's Club. First on Saturday, March 11th, it's Molly's Revenge. They're revered in California as one of the most energetic, exciting, and innovative bands. Their arrangements of traditional Celtic jigs and reels bring the tunes up to date and will get you dancing and shouting for more.
No rain, Road.
And on Sunday, March 12th, it's singer, songwriter, and storyteller John Craigie. We'll be celebrating the release of John Craigie's new CD, No Rain, No Rose.
I am California. Can't you see? Wherever you roam, you'll always want me.
Special guest, the Rainbow Girls.
But they don't want to pick up the pieces when you're broken. When you're broken.
It's a great weekend of music. Saturday, March 11th at the Chico Women's Club, it's Molly's Revenge. Then Sunday, March 12th at the Chico Women's Club, it's singer, songwriter, and storyteller John Craigie with special guest the Rainbow Girls. Don't miss these shows. Benefit for KZFR. More info online at kzfr.org. Tickets for Molly's Revenge, $20. Tickets for John Craigie, $12. Both available at Chico Paper Company in downtown Chico and at Blaze and Jay's.
And you're listening to Peace and Justice on KZFR 90.1, people-powered radio on the mighty Zephyr. Hope that you'll stay tuned today at 1 o'clock for Playing Dead, followed by Devastation Sounds. You know, in addition to awesome, locally produced, marvelously diverse music programs that air here on KZFR, we have a great homegrown public affair of public affairs programs too. Bill Mash already came on, and he's got Without a Roof that airs every Wednesday at 5 o'clock, and then Sue Hildebrandt. She's always cooking up and serving something good on her show. Next week, The Real Issue is going to be hosted by Paul O'Rourke Babb. He's filling in for Sue. And Paul used to host The Point Is with Sue years ago on Saturday mornings. So he's quite the celebrity. Sue wanted me to plug him there. So this last interview that I have is pre-recorded. Unfortunately, he could not be available today, and so we pre-recorded this interview. This is with Peter Melton, and he's somebody that I learned about a couple of weeks ago at a meeting that I went to. So let's have this be our last interview today. This is Jesse Kearns with Peace and Social Justice, and my next guest is Peter Melton, who was a resident here in Chico for a number of years, and he started a group called Daring to Discuss. Last month when I had my guest Jake Davis on, he turned me on to Peter Melton and actually turned me on to this Daring to Discuss group. So I have Peter Melton on the phone with me today, all the way from Ashland, Oregon. Hi, Peter.
Hello there, Jesse, and my lovely Chico community.
Well, I tell you what, lovely. It's been a little wet and a little rainy down here, but I suppose you're getting used to that up in Oregon, yeah?
I am, and I'm learning to see the beauty in more things, Jesse. Come on.
Yes, indeed. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your time here in Chico and what you're doing now up in Ashland.
Yeah, thanks. So I got introduced to Chico because my brother went to college there way back in the early 80s. I grew up in the Santa Cruz area, but came to Chico State from 84 to 87 and graduated with a degree in broadcasting. I was a sports broadcaster, was my first passion. I did some work at old Channel 24 there, running around to high school sport events and whatnot. Then I got into a few other different things in my life. I was in the travel business. I've been an event producer. I've been worked for a nonprofit foundation helping young people explore spirituality. And then I moved back to Chico in 2008. My brother has lived there ever since college. He stayed. He's a landscape architect there in Chico. And I moved back in 2008 to hang out with him and his kids and worked with Clean Canteen for a few years in there.
Oh, nice.
And right at the early stages of that whole process going crazy, and they've done so well. Pretty proud Chico company there. And then a few years back, I moved home to help my father as he was going through the last stages of his life. And that was ended about a year and a half ago. He passed in a good way, and I moved back up to Ashland just the 1st of January, where I had lived from 2000 to 2008 when I was doing my work with an author called Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote a book called Conversations with God.
Ah, very good.
And that's what originally brought me here, and to some degree, that's what helped bring me back was all the great connections and love I have for this little town of Ashland, which still keeps me close enough to make a trip down to Chico when the time is right. Yeah, so then with the group, so well, I guess ever since Al Gore's movie, The Inconvenient Truth, in 2006, I've had an interest in what's going on with our climate. But that lay dormant for a few years until 3 years ago now, I got turned on to some more science that was percolating and saying, wow, we sure seem to be headed in a pretty dire direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised that I was interested in that because I've been I'm a Libra middle child, peacekeeping, peace activist kind of guy, and the last thing I want to be is someone who's dancing around the world telling people that we're in big trouble. But for some reason, that's kind of what has served itself up in my life, is I got very fascinated by the research of Guy McPherson,
yeah,
who's a conservation biologist out of Arizona, who the way he puts the numbers together, it doesn't add up very good for this fragile little planet and fragile system that we have set up here. And I ended up bringing him to Chico a couple of times, once in 2014 and once in 2016, or several times I brought him. I also brought Carolyn Baker to town in 2015, and she focuses more on, well, what does it feel like if in fact this is happening? What feelings are we going through? And she's a grief counselor and a psychologist, and amongst many other things, a really deep into the news, into what's happening in the planet, not just with climate, but with the politics and everything. And so Chico's always been a stop as I dared to put my promoter skills and event planner skills together with my passion for, hey guys, what's happening with our planet here? Maybe we ought to take a look. And that led to the start of the group was, man, I want to talk about this more. Who wants to talk? And I had a few friends, including Jake and Mary Nelson, longtime activists in the area, and Mimi Riley from Butte College, and Shannon Rooney from Butte College, a few people that were very interested in having ongoing communications. And so I said, well, let's just set a time once a month there at the Chico Peace Center where we get together. And if more people want to come, great. And if they don't, great. I just want to continue the conversation and dare to discuss these things that aren't so much fun to talk about.
Right. And I really enjoyed meeting with that group. I met them last week, and Jake did a fantastic job at leading the group, but they are wonderful people. I know this is probably an oversimplification, but there seems to be three camps when it comes to addressing climate change. There are those who say, well, we need to make radical changes right now, or we're going to use up all of our natural resources, poison the water and atmosphere, and we'll just die a slow and horrible death. But hey, there's still a chance, you know. And then there are those who say, well, climate change is a hoax created to scare people into funding alternative energy, whatever. We're just in the middle of a planet's natural warming and cooling cycle, and the planet's tougher than this, and we really don't make any significant difference. So, you know, let's just go on with our lives. But then there's that third camp that says we've gone past the point of no return, so we need to start talking about global hospice care. And I take it that's kind of where you're at.
I find myself thinking that all three camps are important aspects for daring to explore this for oneself.
Right.
And first of all, a lot of people don't want to explore this at all, and I completely understand, and you're free to do what you will with your life. But those who believe it's a hoax or just want to count it out as a natural cycle, I invite them to zoom back a little bit, because this crazy Homo sapien thing. We're quite an interesting species. We have really got hooked on that this whole thing is very human-centric, earth-centric, now-centric kind of existence. And we've lost the fact that there's, 14 billion years, best we calculate, going on with the universe unfolding, and that we, regardless of how long you think humans in our form have been around, some say only 6,000 or 8,000 years. Others say a couple million years. Some form of Homo has been around, and humans at least a couple 100,000 years. Some form of humanity has been dancing around. So somewhere in there, you know, regardless of what that is, it's a blink of a cosmic eye.
Yeah.
And so So this natural cycle story, when you look at the natural cycle of the planet, Earth's temperature history, I was pulling up and remembering it exactly, there's only been two different times in the last 300 million years that the planet has stayed stable enough for anything like a civilization to emerge and to have enough time to really blossom. The other one was roughly 300 million years ago, and then now.
Yeah.
And so if you dare to look back, it's like usually the Earth is usually in this hothouse place that humanity couldn't possibly exist in, way up at 18, 22 degrees Celsius, somewhere in that range. And we sit in this 12 to 15 range where this possibility even exists. So there's only been a couple even chances in the history of the planet for something like this to emerge. And when you look at these natural cycles, whenever it does get to that bottom place where we could make it, we end up with what happens next is a steep warming way up from where we're at now, way up into the 18 to 20 degrees, which is just not habitable for our kind of story.
Right.
So if this is a natural cycle, then those people should be extremely concerned that it's going to get very hot very soon.
Sure.
And make it not habitable. And I understand you don't want to look at it because this is a beautiful thing we got going here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of what we're doing here that isn't beautiful, but we like to not look at that. The effect that we're having on the planet, how much humanity is affecting the planet, and how much our population that is just skyrocketing out of control. If you look at any kind of graph, I mean, we're adding, oh man, I'll never forget the first time I heard this, Jesse. We add over a million people every week, births minus deaths. And so that creates another billion people every 12 to 14 years. So we're headed way past this 7.5 billion that we're at now to 8 and 9 and 10, depending on how much longer this planet dares to hold on to us.
Right.
Right? And so that's got to really be taken into consideration that, wait, it's a much bigger story. We're populating like crazy. We're consuming like crazy. And just throwing our trash wherever because we got away with it for the first few hundred years of throwing it wherever we want. But now the delicate web of life is saying, wait a minute. So that kind of gives us a framing for where we're at here, because as we look at the three camps to consider to go into, it's like, where are we? We're at a place now, and I love also the analogy. I love to use analogies to help make sense. It's like, well, if it gets a few degrees warmer, who cares? We're fine.
Right.
Right? In fact, most of the world would say hooray. Right? And that's a big misunderstanding that we've had, that a few degrees, the human body can handle 20 degrees. You could be inside and walk outside and handle that easy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And even more. But the delicate balance of our planet is not suited for that. And we really need what's called habitat, the ability to grow foods and have some sort of stable weather patterns to understand in order to feed the more and more millions of mouths that we bring in every week.
Yeah.
And so when we start looking at it that way, it's like, okay, so this is, first of all, it's amazing that we're even here and have had this long of a time to grow a civilization. But the way we've been growing it, if we dare to look at it, is very questionable. There's an amazing quote, Farley Moat. We think we're a good species going somewhere important. Well, we've never even stopped to wonder, what are we up to?
Yeah.
You know, it's just been full steam ahead. Let's get as much as we can. This is great. And, you know, I'm as guilty as anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And especially us in the privileged West, you know, that we've had it really good. So we went with it. So that kind of circles us around. And now here, when it starts to get a little warmer, if you dare to understand what that does to the delicate fabric of our planet, it's like when you leave your car to go shopping there in Chico on a summer afternoon and you forget to crack your window and leave it down a little bit. Well, the heat can get in, but then the shortwave energy that tries to get out can't get out. And so you come back and your car is 150 degrees inside, right?
Right.
And you could barely get inside. Well, to some degree, that's what's happening to our planet. All the gases we've put up in the atmosphere, these greenhouse gases, are allowing the heat to come into our fragile Earth, but it's not allowed to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's getting warmer. And when things start getting warmer, stuff changes, right? And what changes is the ice starts melting. and the weather patterns start shifting, and you get this polar vortex thing that we never used to have that dips down, way down, and freezes out Texas, you know, or changes the weather, and it's hot on the East Coast right now in February when it's supposed to be cold. Anyway, all these things are happening, so a couple of degrees change makes a big difference in the big overall story.
Mm-hmm.
So with that as kind of a framework for this discussion, we say, okay, here's the camps. Perhaps it's a hoax and this is a natural cycle and we're having nothing to do with it. It sure doesn't look that way if you study any of the details. Humanity, this rise in temperature could only be caused by us and all the stuff that we're doing. It's really adding dramatically to this rise. Right. But if you want to avoid this topic, I don't blame you for turning the show off.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's not good for ratings.
But if
you find yourself drawn to, wow, I do want to know what's happening, then here we are with the other camp. Is there a chance to save this? And if so, can we make radical change now?
Yeah, and I think that part of that was the big impact of Al Gore's movie. You know, that there it is, on graphed out and everything. And that movie had a big impact on me, too.
Yeah, it woke a bunch of people up, but it ended with change your light bulbs and we'll be okay, you know, or we have till 2100 and surely greater minds than mine are working on this, so I'll worry about it later. And that's kind of where it left, and it left a lot of environmentalists and scientists very sad because he was right on the precipice of saying, man, this thing is, and he even said it, and many scientists have said, if we don't change dramatically, this thing's going out of control, mm-hmm. But they stopped there. They don't dare to discuss. They don't dare to go, well, what does that mean, get out of control? And what does it mean we've got to make radical change now? What would radical change even look like? And even I spoke at the sustainability conference last year, and I'm speaking again. It's like, what are we trying to sustain? We've got to dare to look at the big question. Because we can't sustain this set of living arrangements. We can't sustain a million new people every week wanting more and more stuff and expect our delicate planet to take care of things. So radical change now really means radical change now.
Yeah.
And I think that we're getting close to that moment where the more and more scientists are agreeing with Dr. McPherson, who says this thing, we got these feedback loops, and the more the ice melts, the more it melts. And then the more water is melting, the more ice. And the sun used to reflect off the ice and go back out into space. But when the sun hits the ocean, it makes the ocean warmer, mm-hmm. which melts more ice, which creates more sun landing in the ocean instead of the ice. It melts more of the ice. So it's what's called a feedback loop. The more ice that melts, the more ocean gets warmer. The more ocean gets warmer, the more ice that melts. And we're seeing that in the Arctic right now. If you haven't looked at what's going on in the Arctic right now, you are not paying attention. It is literally 30, 40, 50 degrees warmer than it normally is in the dead of winter right now, today, in the Arctic. And that is melting ice during a time when the ice is supposed to be growing. It's melting. And so there's a big event about to happen, maybe this year, maybe next year, or two more if we're very lucky, where the ice melts so much during what we used to call summer, September, the end of September, that there could actually be no ice in the Arctic for a short period of time in the dead of summer, and that's called a blue ocean event.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, the sun is just all soaking into the ocean, and the ocean's already getting hotter and hotter, and melting more and more ice, not just in the Arctic, but in the Antarctic. They thought the Antarctic was safe for a longer period of time, but now they're finding out that it's melting a lot faster and has a big crack in it right now. Another shelf is going to come off in the next couple of years. So there's just a lot going into, am I going to dare to really ponder this topic? Because radical change now would mean Manhattan-style project, everything shifts. We spend nothing on defense and everything on every possible scientist who could think about how we could possibly slow this down a little bit to buy ourselves some more time. And at the same time, we have to look at population and consumption, amongst other things. There's an author named Joanna Macy who calls it active hope, which says, put the weight of your life behind what you want to create. In this case, a sustainable planet, a planet that we could keep living on. Without the attachment to the outcome, because I believe the outcome may be out of our control, which feeds back to the natural cycles, but the cycles that we've created also. But we could still do as much as we can do to try to help the situation.
If you're just joining me, this is Jesse Kearns hosting Peace and Justice Radio here on KZFR, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And we have Peter Melton today on air, and he's talking about global warming and the crisis that we're facing right now.
Yeah, it's really, we got to start using different words. Abrupt climate change, climate crisis, even the word extinction is now entered into the vocabulary for scientists who are looking deeply at this. We're already in the sixth great extinction for other animals and other species that we don't care so much about. But what's real now is we have to look at the very, very real possibility that this thing could spin out of control and change the dynamic on the planet to where foods don't grow where they normally grow, and sea levels rise, and so many of us live close to sea level, and that the social fabric is very, very thin, and that the unrest and the collapse that could happen from a combination of crop failure and rising seas or just complete temperature changes throws us into that third category you mentioned of, is it possibly too late? And are we really in a whole different category where it's more like hospice? Mm-hmm. It's more like, wow, we've taken this thing too far before we realized it was too far. Even though, yes, there were some people warning us, we were addicted to our luxuries, and I'm right with it. Not that any of us weren't, but it was just too hard to see through the muck to realize that maybe we've gone too far. And there are quite a few people now, scientists and scholars, who are thinking that even with a Manhattan-style project, where we put all of our energy into trying to shade the planet or mellow out the sun or do some major changes to the ocean or variety of things, that the feedback loops are too many,
right,
and too much, and that we really need to find ourselves now in a state of planetary hospice that, right, says, wow, at a minimum, it's very possible that this thing is spinning out of control. And that could mean, well, some people predict as low as a couple of years. Other people 10 to 20 years. Other people think maybe we have 50 years. So there's an uncertainty as to how much the feedback loops will feed back. But there's really, damn, I hate being the one who has to say this, but there's just nothing on the good side of the ledger, Jesse.
Right. Yeah.
There's nothing.
I know Guy McPherson, I think in his book Going Dark, was predicting 2030 as the extinction event.
Yep. So. And now he's come shorter, and there was even a talk on the RT television did a thing yesterday that somebody's predicting 2026, and that's extinction. That's the end of humanity.
Right.
So that means things unravel in the next couple of years pretty hard, and then they go way down here, downwind in years 4, 5, and 6, and then there's a few little pockets of people that survive for years 7, 8, and 9, and then there's none left in 10,
right,
because it's spun out of control.
Well, here's a question. So let's say, how long ago was it that Al Gore put his
2006.
Movie out? It was 2006. So if we started making the radical changes that Al Gore suggested that we make at that time, would we be at this point?
Well, that's the problem. The changes that he ended up suggesting were get your Prius and change your light bulbs.
Right.
That these small increments were going to add up. And that somehow everybody would do it. You see, this is a global problem.
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of fun if it was just an American problem or a California problem to see if we could actually come together and realize that, you know, we've got to eat differently, we've got to use our energy differently, we've got to have babies differently, you know, we've got to do it all different. But even if we would have taken on massive change in 2006, well, there's no way of knowing for sure, but you would have had the whole planet would have had to get behind it.
Yeah.
And you've got so many cultures that are just now getting the taste of the good life.
Right.
And in the Chinas and Indias and places that are like, wait a minute, you guys have been living the high party zone here, and we want some of that. We want cars. We want animal products. We want all this. So even if we went bonkers in 2006, it seems unlikely that the planet, that all of us could have come together and made the dramatic shifts that would be necessary to to turn the boat, if you will. They often use the Titanic as an analogy in this too, that, you know, maybe some other people say if we would have done it in the 70s, you know, if we would have shifted when they first got hint that that things were twisting on us, that we would have had a much better chance at it.
And it still would have had to been on a global scale, too. It couldn't have
it
just
still
been,
would have had to been on a practically instant global scale, like a mass consciousness shift. This is where my focus has shifted to now in this category of hospice, if you will, is that how great can we be during this chapter when we don't know exactly, but it sure looks dark? What could humanity bring out? What can we call forth in ourselves during this time? Can we create the energy, a consciousness shift, a collective intelligence shift, where just maybe humanity and the Earth body itself, the Gaia, the living planet that we live on, the living solar system, the living universe, somehow creates some kind of shift that allows us to see this bigger picture that we're talking about and realize that it will require everybody changing or the boat sinks. And
I hate to cut that interview short, but we just got a alert from the National Weather Service in Sacramento. They have issued a flood watch for interior Northern California, and that's from Sunday evening through early Tuesday morning. An incoming strong storm system will bring a period of excessive rainfall to Northern California, and the combination of saturated ground, heavy rain, and snowmelt will result in large amounts of runoff into rivers and streams. Significant rises in rivers and streams draining from the mountains can be expected beginning Sunday night, so we've got a little time. Elsewhere, flooding of poor drainage areas and flood-prone creeks and streams will be possible across the Sacramento and northern San Joaquin valleys. Mudslides in areas of higher terrain are also possible, which could lead to road closures and significant travel delays. Precautionary preparedness actions are encouraged. A flood watch means there is a potential for flooding based on just the current forecast. So no need to panic. You should just monitor later forecasts and be alert for possible flood warnings. Those living in areas prone to flooding should be prepared to take action should flooding develop. And, you know, that's kind of scary news considering this last week and all that we've been through, which, my golly, I've got to put out some shout outs to some folks who helped quite a bit during this crisis last week, and the number of people that had to be evacuated all along the Feather River. There's many churches in Paradise, in Grass Valley, here in Chico, Neighborhood Church. The fairgrounds opened up to receive evacuees. First Christian Church, my church, we actually housed the volunteers because sometimes those Red Cross volunteers need a place that they can call their own so they're not right in the middle of everything. So when they have their 12-hour shifts, they would just come on into the church and sleep. I got to give a shout-out to both In Motion Fitness and Chico Sports Club for providing showers not only for evacuees but also for the people who volunteered. Got a shout out to 7-Eleven, Roots Catering, Neighborhood Church, Bidwell Prez, so many places that stepped up to the plate and helped out, but I'm sure there are many more that I didn't mention. But we do need to mention some of our underwriters. Peace and Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by A1 Brake and Alignment Specialists with over 20 years of experience in automotive care. A1 Brake and Alignment Services makes and models of cars, trucks, and off-road vehicles and all forms of automotive maintenance and repair, including air conditioning. A1 Brake and Alignment is located at 824 Nord Avenue and can be reached at 894-1149 and by a Happy at Home, providing exceptional in-home care services and creating peace of mind for your loved ones. Happy at Home's caregivers allow loved ones to remain at home and still get the care they need. Services include personal care, companionship, light housekeeping, transportation, grocery shopping, meal preparation, and more. So visit happyathomechico.com or call 774-2127 for a free care plan evaluation. Happy at Home, providing exceptional in-home care. Well, we hope you join us next Friday on February 24th at 11:30 a.m. for the Peace and Justice program. As they said in the old media, same bat time, same bat channel, 90.1 FM here on the Zephyr. And that's all the time we have today. Stay tuned for Playing Dead, followed by Devastation Sounds. And what we're going to do today is we're going to go out with an oldie but goodie by Harry Belafonte. And Harry Belafonte is reminding us that as creatures of earth, of fire, of water, and spirit, we can turn the world around. So until next week, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly.
We come from the fire, living in the fire. Go back to the fire, turn the world around. River wash the mountain, fire make the sunlight turn the world around. Heart is of the river, body is the mountain, spirit is the sunlight turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit, only can the spirit turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit, only can the spirit turn the world around. Do you know?